Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived. Finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad. All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Let's see if we're having some technical difficulties. We may be, but welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, folks. We are on the air. Let's see. Okay, we are on the air. Okay, all right. I had to kind of adjust the volume on this thing because sometimes we have technical difficulties. Even the internet goes down sometimes, and it's slow, it's fast. What can you do, folks? You could just wait and hope for, hopefully everything will be okay. But if not, then we just have to kind of service it and get things back to going like they were. If at all possible. All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We're recording, broadcasting live out of the city of Chicago. There's been another murder in the city of Chicago. A young girl, 2 years old, shot dead. I was just crying yesterday on the show about two other young children being shot. Now we have another one, and the police superintendent is all over the news saying this is a senseless crime. It is senseless, but my thing is that the police department, these guys do not have a handle on the violence in the city of Chicago. They do not have control over what's going on in the city. I don't know what are they getting paid for? Why are they out there? They're not doing anything. Just like I was saying yesterday, the reason why this young girl has died, because there was no police around to stop or prevent this. I mean, I lay this all at the police doors, at the police door. And I know a lot of people out there, they're not blaming the police officers. They're blaming the shooters. But I lay this all at the police. I lay this all at the mayor's feet for not making crime in this city a number one priority. He has to do that. It has to be done. But still in all, they have no plan. They have no solution. They have nothing. They just letting these criminals, it seems, run rampant in the city of Chicago, gunning down the babies. This is crazy. This is stupid. And then the shooters get away. they are not apprehended. They are not caught. They are not in custody. That means that they are out there to shoot other children. I lay this all at the police feet. You may disagree with me. That's you. That's fine. But this is the George Wilder Jr. Show. I understand your disagreement, but I lay it all at, I mean, you got to catch these guys. You got to prevent crime from happening. You serve and you protect. You get paid a pretty good salary. Why isn't this being done? The only time you see the police officers is after the fact, after a crime has been done. And they're all over the place then. They're swarming the goddamn place then. You everywhere you look, there's a police officer after somebody is shot. But where are they before the shots are fired? They should be seen. They should be a visible force. The uniform that the police are wearing is supposed to be a deterrent against crime. People see that uniform. They see that squad car. They are not going to shoot if they see. But if they don't see a cop in the neighborhood, they don't see someone walking the beat or patrolling in a car or something, they are going to shoot and kill. I just don't understand this. I just don't understand it. It just behooves me that the police officers are now all over the television making excuses. Yeah, it's a horrible crime. Yeah, it's this. Yeah, it's that. You are not doing your job. As long as crime has surpassed January 2016 for 2017. It has surpassed the crime statistics of last year during the month of January 2016. January 2017 is on the brink of being historical in Chicago for being for the most homicides and the most young people, children shot and killed. And these police officers are still walking around collecting their paychecks. I mean, you may disagree with me. I don't care. That's you. That's fine. But I lay a lot of this at the door of the police officers because they get paid to serve and protect, to protect the people of this city, the children, the babies of this city, and it is not happening. It is not happening. We need new leadership. We need somebody with some ideas, some solutions, somebody to come in here. Not just arrest these young men, but to put to eliminate the carnage altogether. I mean, you got some states where crime is nowhere near this high, and you cannot always run back to saying we need tougher gun laws. Chicago has the toughest gun laws in America. We just have some people in office and in charge of things that do not have a clue. If they come up with a plan, it's a plan that's not working. They got to come up with some workable solutions. Yeah, I mean, if every baby or child in the city of Chicago is shot, maybe they should sue the police department for not being there to that child from being shot, since they, the police officers and the mayor and the governor, are getting paid with taxpayer dollars to protect the people of this state, including Chicago. I bet you they'll find a way to solve crime then. I bet if the south and west sides of the city were white, Caucasian, I bet they'd find a way to stop it. If it was filled with, if the south and west sides of the city were condominiums, businesses, corporations, this would not be happening. They would find a way to protect those people over there. But they can't. They don't want. I just have got a feeling that they don't really want to bring down crime in the city of Chicago because they're not trying. They're not trying. And it pisses me off. Every time I come here on the radio broadcast, I got to broadcast out to the world that another child, baby, has been gunned down in the city of Chicago. Needlessly, senselessly, of course. And the police department, making excuses. We don't need excuses. We need solutions. We need plans. We need ideas of how to bring down the carnage in the city of Chicago. We need a new administration, period, because these guys have had years to try to do this. There recently was an federal investigation of the police department, and it was zinging. I'm going to play it later on. I have a clip of it. I'm going to play it later on. But there was a federal investigation into police brutality in the city of Chicago, but it didn't mention too much about the homicides that go on in this city every single damn night and how the police officers just make excuses. Now, they said they were going to get better at this. They've gotten no better at this. They said they're going to be better trained. They're not better trained because people are constantly, children are constantly, babies are constantly dying in the city of Chicago. And this doesn't have to be, folks. It does not have to be this way. We need people who know what the hell they're doing. We need people with new ideas, solutions, and better plans on how, not better plans, but undeniably plans to bring down the shootings. I mean, the police take guns off the streets every day, from my understanding, but if for every gun they take off the street, two more appear, or three more, four more, who knows? The thing is, you have to go get the bad guys. You know what they, you know where they are. You know what they look like. Take them off the damn streets. But they're going to bring up all kinds of excuses. Well, there's a code of silence on the street. Well, there's a code of silence within the police department also. If there's a code of silence on the street, then your job is to find a way to break it. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Folks, it's not a laughing matter, but I'm just a giddy kind of a guy. And it's just pitiful. I mean, it is totally pitiful. My guest today is Milo Shapiro. I think he's going to be talking on public speaking. This is a variety show, folks. So we talk about a number of things all the time. But, you know, since I'm working in Chicago and I'm doing this show from Chicago, you know, I have to say these things. You know, Chicago is a beautiful city, but we just have people in the city that don't give a damn about this city. And I'm not just talking about the thugs and gangbangers. I'm talking about the police officers, the mayor. I mean, I don't think these people give a shit about what's going on in the city of Chicago. If they did, they would solve it. They would make crime their number one priority, not second or third or fourth. Number one, these babies are being gunned down in the streets. I don't want to hear about some library being built on the north side of the city, or the parks are being renovated or whatever. So, condos are going up. I want to hear about what is going on to solve some of these murders, some of these homicides. Some of these senseless shootings, which is nothing because the bad guys who perpetrate these kind of crimes, they go on to do more crime because they're never caught. They're never apprehended, which is crazy. We need to do something about our government, folks. Our government is failing us. We have to get out there and do something, you know, because they're doing nothing. I understand that it's a lot of community leaders out there that's doing a lot of great things, but somehow it is not enough. These bad guys, these thugs, these gangbangers, these bad guys, you can give me all kind of reasons to why they're still out there on the streets. I don't want to hear it. What I want to hear is that these guys are caught and prosecuted. That's what I want to hear. I don't want to hear that someone is shot and the bad guy gets away. I mean, not just only homicides in the city of Chicago, a lot of thefts, auto thefts. Guys are breaking into breaking into auto dealers and stealing cars right out of the show place. This is crazy. I mean, where is the police? Where is the police who are supposed to be patrolling those areas, protecting that little space there? Where are the police? These things will not be happening if police was there. If there was a show, if police were patrolling the area constantly, these things would not happen. Where is the police when these things are happening? Even when people are getting mugged on the street, their phones are being snatched out of their hands. All it takes, in my view, to stop a lot of this carnage is a saturation of police presence in the city of Chicago. That's what it takes. A saturation of police presence in the city of Chicago. And it's not happening. It is not happening, folks. All right, once again, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, 347-857-1762. We are in Chicago. It's a beautiful city. It's a beautiful time. And if you have heard my rant at the beginning of the show, you'll know I'm talking about the latest shootings in the city of Chicago. Yesterday, there was two young girls shot. They were on life support. One of them died. And now a two-year-old child has been killed. Is the latest shot. It's just pathetic. It's just awful. What's going to change? Something has to change. We are actually, the city of Chicago, we are actually have surpassed January 2016 homicides. We've already outpaced that this year, 2017, from last year. And that's pathetic. That's awful. That's uncalled for. I know in my heart there is a way to bring down the carnage in the city of Chicago. They do not want the National Guard. They need the National Guard, but they will not accept it. They don't even like for you or me to even say it. You know, But the police cannot do it, or they will not do it, or they just throw their hands up at this. I mean, if there was a saturated police presence, this would not be going on. But they don't. They'll talk about it, you know, try to throw you and I off balance with this. But I look at it this way. I mean, these police officers, they get paid a lot. I'm not bashing the police officers. I think there's some great dedicated cops out there, but they're just not doing the job. Maybe, you know, maybe it's not their fault. Maybe it's their commander's fault or the sergeants, lieutenants, whatever, who are giving out the orders to these cops. I don't know what it is, but I do know that most of them are not doing their jobs if these babies are getting shot. And no one is in custody. No one is caught. There's no one that they're questioning on these things, on these murders, on these shootings. These people are still out there and going to shoot and kill again if they're not caught. I just think the Chicago police has just, blew it on this one. I mean, I just get so pissed off every day when I hear about these young kids being gunned down. For nothing, sitting in a car, sitting in their home, sitting on the front of their steps. The time, these times, no police presence is nowhere around near these people. The only time you see police presence is when somebody is shot. What about before they're shot? What about before this happened? This is supposed to be, I don't know, I'm so emotional, just like I was yesterday about these two young girls. Now it's a two-year-old baby that's been shot. You're speechless. I'm dragging. I'm stuttering. I don't know what I'm doing, but I do feel really, really bad for the parents. It's just terrible, 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 terrible. I hope you heard my rant at the beginning of the show because, you know, it's a good one. It's a good one, folks. It just, I'm sick and tired of people are leaving the city of Chicago. There's no doubt about it. And I don't blame them. I wouldn't try to stop them. I'd say go. But I can't leave because I'm going to stay here and help try to bring the city and its homicide rate down. I would suggest that everybody do not leave the city. Do not leave your neighborhood. Fight your neighbor. Fight for your city. Fight for your neighborhood. I mean, if you can, help the police any way you can because they need it. Because they can't do this by themselves. Obviously, that's been proven. This has got to stop. The murder, the carnage, these bad guys getting away. This has got to stop. I mean, the murder. Let me put it this way. Crime in general in the city of Chicago has to come down. We can't have people walking up on the subway platform or the L platform robbing people of their phones. We can't have young thuggish guys breaking into auto dealerships and driving off with luxury cars almost every single night. Where is the police? We can't have sexual assault of young women who are just walking down the street. We can't have that. Where is the police? My understanding, they were supposed to hire 1,000 cops. I don't know. I don't see it. Apparently, a lot of these people on the west and south sides of the city, they don't see it either. All we see is bodies piling up in the morgue. And police, if they're anywhere near the crime, they're making excuses. You can't make excuses. Don't sit up there and tear up. Get out there and find these guys. We don't need to see you on television. We need to see you out here doing your job and trying to bring down some of these homicides rates in this city because it's spiraling out of control as I speak. And as for Donald Trump, who says that what's going on in Chicago? This guy is not going to come to Chicago. He's just grandstanding by using the carnage, the crime in the city of Chicago. He's not coming to Chicago. He doesn't have a plan either because his ass, his butt is in hot water. You know, that's another topic I'm going to talk about later on in the show, but we have to do something quick about what's going on in the city of Chicago. It's a beautiful city. It's a wonderful city. I'm proud to be here, but still in all, we have to get a handle on what's going on. A two-year-old child has been shot and killed in the city of Chicago, and all the police can do is make excuses. Yesterday, it was two young children that were shot. They both were placed on life support. One has passed away. And the bad guys who have, the people who perpetrated this, they're still out there. They are still out there. There are so many crimes that have been committed in the city of Chicago, shootings mainly. Robberies, and the bad guys are still out there on the street. Why aren't they in jail? Why haven't they been caught? Why haven't they been apprehended? Because the city of Chicago and its police, they have no plan. They have no solution. They have nothing. All they have is their paycheck that they get from us, the taxpayer, to do their jobs, which I think that that they are not doing. Because if they were doing their jobs, people would not be dying on the streets. All right, you've been listening to this. You've been listening to George Wilder. I'm a little pissed off. I'm ranting. This is just too much, folks. I mean, I think you would probably be feeling the same way if this was happening in your neck of the woods every night, and kids, children, babies are being gunned down, and the police department, they don't have a clue. Only thing they can say is that the shootings are senseless. And they also try to say that we need more gun laws. There's no Chicago has the highest, the stringest gun laws than any other state in America, city in America. So that's a bogus excuse. That's a lame excuse. You got Los Angeles, you got New York. Combined, both of these states have a lower crime rate than the city of Chicago at this moment in time. And they, too, have some of the stringest gun laws. So that's a weak excuse for some of these politicians to say or to harp on in the city of Chicago. That's a weak-ass excuse. But that's one that they're going to give because they have no plan. They have no solutions. They have no ideas on how to bring down the homicide rate in the city of Chicago, February 2017, which has also surpassed January and February of 2016. So it's just unreal. And I understand why some people are leaving the city. I understand. But, you know, I mean, I would say don't leave, stay and fight. We get some new leadership in the office. Maybe we can do something with this crime. But until then, I'm pretty sure people are going to still get shot. And the police department, the mayor, they're all going to still make excuses to why they can't solve. They can't keep the people of the city safe. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, broadcasting out of the city of Chicago. I have sweat on my face, folks, because this is just unreal. It's just, I don't know. It's just unreal. It's just a 2-year-old child shot. You know, it just bring tears to your eyes to think about something like that. And the police department and the mayor, these people are just, you know, they're just numb to it all. How can you be numb to this? You know, I mean, this happens. It happens all the time, and something has to give. All right, you've been listening to George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. I think we have a phone call. Let's go to the phones, folks. All righty. You're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead.
Talking to me?
Yeah, I'm talking to you, Milo Shapiro.
How you doing?
Man, I am really, really, I'm ranting, you know, I'm emotional.
I don't blame you now that I hear what's going on. I didn't know about this news because I'm in San Diego and my head's to the grindstone getting work done. But wow, I can see why you're feeling that level of passion, no question.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it has to. Somebody has to, man. Somebody has to. Somebody has to get a handle on this. And, you know, and I'm doing the best I can do. But I don't know if the police department or the mayor is listening or any of these people are listening. And, you know, a 2-year-old child, man. I mean, all right. Let me digress here. All right. Tell everybody who you are and... Tell everybody who you are and what you're about. Let me see if I...
Sure.
Let me see.
Because they're probably looking confused.
All right.
I was just a caller, not realizing I was your guest today.
No, I knew. I knew everything.
I knew you knew.
You're going to be talking about public speaking?
Yeah.
Okay,
my
go
background,
right ahead.
Sure. So my background is that for 20, coming up on 30 years now, I've been someone who's done improvisation. And in 2000... I started my own business doing team building and motivational speaking where I got the audiences or work groups playing improv games. And I'd love to talk to you more about that too, but what interested me was my public speaking background. And what happened was, the more I was doing speeches, the more I was getting audiences involved and being more creative with my PowerPoints and things like that, people started coming up to me after my speeches and saying, hey, I know this isn't really what you do, but would you work with me on my speaking skills, or would you come and work with my staff on their speaking skills? And I had been well trained by Toastmasters and the National Speakers Association and other courses that I'd taken, but I had never thought about trying to help others. So I kept saying no, which I look back on now, I could kick myself. And by about the seventh person who said it to me, I thought, wow, the universe is just dumping this in your lap. You are not listening. Maybe this is what's next for you. So I said to that person, well, let's see what we can do for you. I'm not going to charge you very much because this isn't really what I do, but let's see what happens. And he had been selling on QVC. They told me they were going to cut him if he didn't start selling more. And they said, your presentation skills are the problem, but we can't help you fix that. That's not what we do. We're QVC. We sell things. We don't fix people. And so he and I met for a few sessions. We looked at some of his old tapes. I saw some things that I thought were getting in his way. And we worked on those things. And he went back. And not only did he sell enough, he sold out his whole product line in 5 out of his 7 minutes. They had to figure out what to do with 2 minutes of their time. So that became my I wouldn't say career transition, but it became me starting the third part of my business, not team building and not the speaking myself, but helping others with their speaking. And now it's probably 60 to 70% of my business, because there's a lot more people out there who need help with that than who need a speaker for a conference. So between people Googling me and finding me, or Yelping and finding me, that part of my business has really grown, and I just love watching people grow in this thing that's known for many years as one of America's, not just America, one of the world's biggest fears, speaking in public. So it's great to see people grow on that and figure out what they're doing wrong and how they can correct it, because it's almost always things they can correct. So often people think, oh, I'm just not good at it, or I don't have a talent for it, or I have the fear of it. Well, you probably have the fear of it because nobody ever showed you how. You were forced to. It didn't go well. You got scared by it, and that's why you think you've got the fear. How about if you learn how? And that's what usually turns it around for people, is learning how.
I remember my first public speak, when I first, not even my first, but maybe my third or fourth time speaking in front of a crowd of people. Man, I stood up. I saw all these people in front of me. My legs were shaking. My knees was clanging together. But you know what? I did a good job. They clapped afterwards. They enjoyed it. But if they could have saw my knees, my legs shaking and trembling, you know, but I wasn't so much fearful. It just was just something that just happened. I was just shaking. But afterwards, everybody, after the speech was over, after I said what I was saying, you know, people were clapping, they were shaking my hands, and I was just surprised.
Because I thought you could stand up with your legs shaking that much. Maybe that's what
probably.
You were dancing. Yeah, I mean, it's funny because people call it a phobia. And for a very small percentage of people, it's a phobia. But for most people, it's an absolute logical reaction to being asked to do something they're not trained to do. If you or I were asked to do open heart surgery tomorrow, we'd be scared, not because we have a phobia of open heart surgery, but because we're not trained to. But because we speak English, there's this expectation we'll be able to give presentations, and they're completely different skill sets.
Yeah. And I do public speaking now because I think, as being a radio host, that's also public speaking. But knowing that there's, you know, thousands and thousands of people out there who could be listening, that sometimes can get you also, even though you're not facing an audience, but you realize there is an audience out there that listening.
In some ways, it's even more intimidating. And then up the ante once more if it's television. I do television interviews, I really have to remind myself, when that little red light goes on, just talk to the host, pretend they're not even there, because that it can be intimidating to have no idea. I would rather speak to 300 people and have all their eyes on me. At least I can see their reaction. With radio and TV, you don't have a sense of, am I engaging? Is this happening? Should I go a different direction? So in a way, it's even harder with radio and TV. And with you on your own, at least we're in conversation now. I really admire people who are in a situation like you, where you just have to keep on going without having someone to play off of.
No. Sometimes I do have someone here to play off of, but then sometimes I just want to go by myself because I want people to know that whether I have a guest or someone in the studio, that I can handle it on my own at certain points. And public speaking, I mean, I have done it at some universities, and I tell you, every time I get out there in front of that audience, sometimes I have to kind of impromptu. That's kind of scary too, when you have no teleprompter or whatever, nothing, you're just talking from the top of your head. That can be kind of scary, but when you get that feedback from that audience, that tells you a lot. Wouldn't you agree?
And most people aren't working with a teleprompter. That's kind of a unique situation. It comes up. The average person, if they either has notes or PowerPoint, more and more it's PowerPoint. The trick is to not get up there and read your PowerPoint slides to people, because no one in history has ever enjoyed that. But it's what people do because they don't know any better, and it's what they've seen as an example. PowerPoint should be used to guide you through what the next talking point you want to have is.
Okay.
But don't put that on the screen. Have that just there, maybe a picture with the word, let's say you were talking about today's topic. If it was a picture and it had the words police action on it and a photo of what happened today, then you talk for a minute about it. Then you go to the next slide, which might be, say, community, and show people, and then you talk about community. You don't put every sentence that you want to say about community on there. Use it to guide you through the program and to give your visual learners something to look at, something to tie in visually with the words that you're saying. That's what PowerPoint is supposed to be for. And unfortunately, it's become a text to the point where you might as well just mail the PowerPoint to your clients and never have the meeting if you're going to do that. Mm-hmm. Or your coworkers.
Are you an author? Do you have a book?
Yeah, I have a couple of books now. My main book is Skiing, Get A's, Not Z's. And then a couple of years ago, people kept approaching me saying, is this appropriate for my teenager? And it wasn't inappropriate, but it was very business-oriented. It was meant for adults. So I wrote a sequel called Public Speaking for Teens, Get A's, Not Z's. And I'm really proud of that one. It went to number 2 on Amazon in its category. So I just couldn't get that.
Congratulations.
Considering the heavy hitter that was in number 1, I'm really proud of number 2. So I'll take that. but between the two of them, there's something for everybody on those.
Yeah. Have you ever, during your lifetime, have you ever was nervous about speaking in front of an audience, in front of people?
Oh, absolutely. But the worst case scenario for me was when I tried stand-up comedy. I literally left. I held it together on stage and then got backstage. And I don't know what it was about it being over, the impact of what I had just done. I physically started trembling so bad that two people grabbed hold of me because they thought I was going to hit the floor. And then they tried to hand me water and I couldn't drink it because I couldn't hold the glass. And so there was just something about the impact of that. And that was before I was a speaker. I think I could handle stand-up a lot better now. But, even I wasn't immune to it. And things go wrong. The only times I get scared now, I've spoken to, I think my biggest audience is 800 now. That doesn't scare me. But speaking to any size audience is when things go wrong, when the PowerPoint goes out, when your microphone's cutting in and out, when the floor one time was so slippery that I was – self-conscious of every step I took because I didn't want to fall. And here I'm trying to look relaxed and comfortable and I'm afraid to move. Things like that, there is no getting past those things. So you just have to laugh it off as best you can. Now, if I had to do it over again, I would point that floor out to the audience and say, by the way, if it looks like I'm stuck here, this floor is really slippery and I think I'd rather look a little stiff than fall down in front of you. I'd probably get a chuckle from the audience and they'd know. And I think that's one of be human with your audiences. Yeah. They appreciate that kind of honesty. I mean, don't sit up there and complain the whole time, but if something's going on, point out the pink elephant in the room.
You sound like you've been pretty successful with this.
I'd like to think I have been, and not only in getting myself out there and doing the speeches. My speeches are very unusual because they're super interactive. I have the audience playing games with me for half the time I'm speaking.
My
improv-based ones. Yeah. Not on my speeches about public speaking skills. That's more about me. But
that's very important to get the audience involved, where can we find your work? Where can we find your books?
Sure.
Websites and stuff like that.
I can point you through them to Amazon and stuff, but the easiest way, and my last name's not too hard, M-I-L-O, Milo. Excuse me?
Yeah, I was agreeing with you. It's not too hard.
Oh, I thought you were saying, like, no, don't say your website. I thought, okay, better not. Milo, M-I-L-O, Shapiro, S-H-A-P-I-R-O, and that's MiloShapiro.com. You'll find my books there and any other information about my programs. And I do meet with people on Skype, too. Nowadays, that's made it possible for me to coach people as far away as Tokyo.
Wow, that's great. It sounds like you're successful, and I wish you a lot of luck. And I'm still learning public speaking, as you probably know. And, you know, it's one of the greatest things I think anybody can do is speak in front of an audience. And it's a great crowd pleaser, I think. If you can please that audience out there, you got it made. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people I know who are into public speaking, and they go on stage nervous every night. Mm-hmm. You know,
well, maybe they need because they may not know how to rehearse.
Yeah,
a lot of people don't know how to get together the program and how to get ready so to take that out. That's one of the things we work on, is what do you do to prepare? It's not all about what happens that
day. Yeah. So you're saying that there is a possibility of you being a great public speaker and never being frightened or nervous, scared?
I think everyone I know who's really good gets a little butterfly mm-hmm. in their tummy, and that's a good thing.
Okay.
It really is, because then we channel that as energy. If you're kind of dead inside from no sense of excitement about it, it's hard to summon that energy. But if you got just a little bit going, that's not a bad thing. Even Carol Burnett, you know, the queen of comedy of the 70s, said that one time she got a little too full of herself and it didn't make for a good show, and then the next week she had the butterflies back again and she was back on her feet again. So I don't think we have to worry about conquering the fear. I think we have to learn to be in control of it. And once it usually dies down.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was saying earlier, that when I did my first public speaking, I was a little nervous. I wasn't all the way nervous, but I was a little nervous. I'm pretty sure that the audience didn't see my legs, my knees clanging together. And I kind of think I benefited from that, because, you know, afterwards it was a pretty good talk.
Mm-hmm.
And
having survived it, let you know that, okay, if that was the worst
yeah.
my first time up, not knowing what I was doing, being that nervous, I'm sure now you probably still get the butterflies a little bit, but not
No, not like that, because, you know, you get used to it after a while. Even the first time I was on speaking in front of someone, I was really, really nervous. And sometimes I still get nervous, but I managed to get through it. And like you say, you do have to kind of engage the audience, no matter what size it is. You kind of have to bring them in on it, you know, have them participate somewhat.
It depends on the program. If it makes sense, and if there's a good way to do it, then yes. I've seen people try so hard to do it that it wasn't appropriate to that program. It was an informational thing. It was a download of information. And it's not I don't want to give people the impression that, oh, my gosh, I'm really doing something wrong if I'm not being interactive. That said, if there is a good way to get interactive, absolutely. Sometimes it can be as simple as having people vote on something, or turn to the person next to you and answer this question with them and then come back. Little things like that can make that 60-minute time block feel like it's broken up with some interaction. Those can help. Mm-hmm. But once in a while, it doesn't fit, so I don't want to make a blanket statement to people that they have to do it. But yes, people tend to enjoy conferences that are interactive a little bit more. You got to go?
No. I was gonna introduce you, Milo Shapiro, on the George Wilder Jr. Show. All right, go right ahead. We're running out of time.
Okay, then now this is my last point, is in terms of helping with those nerves, too, warming up before you go on stage. A lot of people don't think about warming up, but you wouldn't go for a run without warming up, and yet we go on stage as if nothing needs to be warmed up. So do things to warm up your body. Literally, I'll exercise. Mm-hmm. I'll take a shower in between, but I'll exercise earlier so that my body is warmed up and I'm comfortable in it. I'll move my face around so that my face muscles, especially if it's a morning meeting, are warmed up, and so that I'm looking expressive instead of my muscles being tight. I'll do vocal exercises to warm up my voice so that it's not an effort to project myself, and I'm not likely to trip on my tongue as much if I've done things to warm up. And these are things I go through with my clients, and they often say, you know what I came to realize is you're going to warm up, but you don't want to do it in front of the audience, so do it beforehand. So that's
All right, Milo Shapiro on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Milo Shapiro, am I correct? On the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thanks for coming on. You were great. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Pleasure being with you.
All right. We will send him a link later on in the show. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, folks. We will be right back. We're going to do this.
Good evening, family. This is Oliver Sandelay out of New Orleans, Louisiana, coming to you with another great and informative video.
It was important for him to be briefed because the plan was to brief the president-elect as well, that these allegations had been circulating.
Pamela, hang on. We're going to go to Chicago, listen to the Attorney General Loretta Lynch talking about the civil rights investigation into the Chicago Police Department.
Because they are the indispensable members of the team that led to this announcement today. Now, one of my highest priorities as Attorney General has been to ensure that every American enjoys police protection that is lawful, that is responsive and transparent. But as the events of recent years in Ferguson, in Baltimore, Cleveland, and many other cities have made clear, far too many Americans feel that they do not receive that kind of law enforcement. And far too many communities suffer because of painful divisions between police officers and citizens, divisions that make it significantly harder to reduce crime, to expand opportunity, and to ensure that every American, including our police officers, can be safe and secure in their neighborhoods. Now, in December of 2015, as part of that work, I announced that the Department of Justice, after careful review and extensive consultation with state and local officials and community leaders, was opening an investigation into whether the Chicago Police Department had engaged in a pattern or practice of violations of the Constitution or federal statutory law. And for the past 13 months, our investigators have worked tirelessly to obtain a full and an accurate and an impartial picture of policing in Chicago. They have conducted hundreds of interviews with citizens, with officials, with officers. They have reviewed thousands of pages of documents. They have observed Chicago Police Department officers on the job. And on the basis of this exhaustive review, the Department of Justice has concluded that there is reasonable cause to believe that the Chicago Police Department engages in a pattern or practice of use of excessive force in violation of the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution. Our investigation found that this pattern or practice is in no small part the result of severely deficient training procedures and accountability systems. Now, as my colleagues will explain in greater detail, CPD does not give its officers the training they need to do their jobs safely, effectively, and lawfully. It fails to properly collect and analyze data, including data on misconduct complaints and training deficiencies, and it does not adequately review use of force incidents to determine whether force was appropriate or lawful, or whether the use of force could have been avoided altogether. All of these issues are compounded by poor supervision and oversight, leading to low officer morale and an erosion in officer accountability. These are serious problems, and they bear serious consequences for all Chicagoans. As I said when I announced this investigation, the systems and policies that fail ordinary citizens also fail the vast majority of Chicago Police Department officers who risk their lives every day to serve and protect the people of Chicago. And during the course of our investigation, the department heard from countless officers who were themselves disillusioned and discouraged by strained trust, by inadequate training, poor oversight, and inattention to officer wellness and safety. Now, those officers are proud to wear the badge, but they recognize that they lack the support, both from the community and from the city, to properly do their jobs. And they understand that repairing trust with the communities that they serve will require difficult and meaningful reforms. Now, to Chicago's credit, the city has not been standing still since we announced our investigation at the end of 2015. Under the leadership of Mayor Emanuel and Superintendent Johnson, Chicago Police Department has taken a number of encouraging steps to improve oversight and to encourage community-oriented policing. But our report makes clear that there is still considerable work to be done, work that will require federal partnership and independent oversight. And that is why I am pleased to announce today that the Department of Justice and the City of Chicago have agreed to begin negotiations on an independently monitored, court-enforceable consent decree. And in the days ahead, we will continue speaking to local residents, local authorities, to officers, to ordinary citizens, to gather their perspectives about the challenges facing this city and the changes needed to address them. Now, of course, this announcement comes at a critical juncture for this proud city. Chicago is grappling with a deeply troubling rise in violent crime, one that has already claimed far too many lives. Now, fighting violent crime has long been a priority for the Justice Department as well. And we at the Justice Department have brought our full resources to bear on this issue, from the FBI, ATF, U.S. Marshals Service, and the DEA, who have participated in joint task forces to combat violence, to the Department's Violence Reduction Network. Now, our efforts to work closely with local authorities to fight violence in a number of ways began long before we opened this investigation, and they will continue during and after this investigation. And no one understands that better than Zach Farden. Under his outstanding leadership, the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Northern District of Illinois has worked literally around the clock to tackle gun violence, gang cases, and other serious crimes afflicting this great city. And at the same time that Zach's office actively partnered with our Civil Rights Division on this pattern and practice investigation, the prosecutors in his office in 2016 charged the highest number of illegal firearm cases in any year since 2004. So the U.S. Attorney's Office here and federal investigative agencies have truly ramped up their efforts to help stem the recent rise in violence. But as I have seen firsthand from my community policing tour, that work is undermined if the community does not trust law enforcement. And that's why, in addition to increasing intelligence efforts and enhancing crime-fighting operations, we're also working with the city on a range of other critical initiatives, from youth outreach to counseling for the victims of crime. And these efforts will continue, and they will only be strengthened by the reforms that we are announcing today. Because successfully reducing and preventing violent crime requires a collaborative and trusting relationship between officers and residents. And where that relationship is broken, as it is in far too many of Chicago's neighborhoods, it's much harder to solve crimes and reduce violence. Right. By making the changes necessary to bring constitutional, community-oriented policing to Chicago, the city and the police department will place itself in a much stronger position to combat the scourge of violence. And finally, I want to commend the people of Chicago for their patience and for their resilience throughout this long process. Community police relations is an especially difficult issue. It taps into long histories, deep beliefs, and strong opinions, and there's no lack of strong opinions here in Chicago. But it also forces us to honestly acknowledge the ways in which our society has fallen short in extending the protection of our laws to all Americans. It does not yield to swift or simple solutions. But meaningful change is never easy. The task of realizing the promise of our country has always been hard. And here in Chicago, thanks to the determination and the commitment of countless public officials, police officers, advocates, and citizens, we've taken the first step towards meaningful change and a brighter future. The people of this city have recognized that there is work to be done, and they've committed themselves to seeing that work through to the end. And the Department of Justice will stand beside you along the way. And I'm confident that when we are finished, when this review is finished and the changes are set in place, Chicago will be a stronger, a safer, and a more united city for everyone who calls it home. And at this time, I'll turn things over to Vinita Gupta, the head of the Civil Rights Division, who will say more about our findings. Thank you.
Good morning, and thank you, Attorney General Lynch, and thank you also to U.S. Attorney Zach Farden. I am deeply grateful for the extraordinary work of the DOJ team, of the Civil Rights Division, and the U.S. Attorney's Office here in Chicago that has worked tirelessly over the past 13 months. I also want to thank Mayor Rahm Emanuel and Superintendent Eddie Johnson for their cooperation during this investigation and for their commitment to reform. And I want to thank the people of Chicago, including the city's police officers, for engaging with the Justice Department over the last many months because you care about your city so much. Since we launched this investigation in December of 2015, the Justice Department has deployed our largest team ever in a policing pattern or practice case to conduct a thorough and fair investigation of the Chicago Police Department and Independent Police Review Authority. We reviewed thousands of documents and hundreds of force reports. We met with community members, city officials, and each of the police unions. We visited each of Chicago's 22 police districts, went on 60 ride-alongs, spoke to 340 members of the CPD, from command staff to line officers. We also met with over 90 community organizations and heard from more than 1,000 Chicagoans. And 11 independent subject matter experts, most of them current or former law enforcement officials, assisted with this investigation. As the Attorney General said, we found that the Chicago Police Department engages in a pattern or practice of using excessive force, including deadly force and non-deadly force. This pattern includes, for example, shooting at people who present no immediate threat and tasing people for not following verbal commands. This conduct doesn't only harm residents, it endangers officers. It results in avoidable deaths and injuries and trauma. And it erodes police community trust, trust that truly is the cornerstone of public safety. We found that this pattern of unconstitutional force is largely attributable to systemic deficiencies within the CPD and the city. We found that CPD does not adequately train its officers to use the appropriate amount of force. For example, we observed training on deadly force that used a video made decades ago with guidance inconsistent with both current law and internal policy. We found that CPD officers do not fully report their uses of force and that supervisors are not appropriately reviewing these uses of force. We found that Chicago's accountability systems are broken. Many complaints that should be investigated are not. And when investigations do occur, they are glacially slow and staffed by overworked and undertrained investigators who often fail to obtain basic witness statements and evidence. Officers are too rarely held accountable for misconduct, and when they are, discipline is unpredictable and ineffective. We found that CPD's approach to data collection on the use of force prevents CPD from spotting dangerous trends, responding with remedial training, and sharing information that would be useful to the public. We found that CPD's promotion systems are not transparent. And we found that CPD is failing to provide officers with the support that they need to deal with the stress and trauma of their jobs. We make these findings acutely aware that this is a time of significant challenge for Chicago residents and police officers. Gun violence has spiked, relations between police officers and residents is strained, and officer morale is suffering. But really, this context only heightens the importance and urgency of our findings. The failures that we identified and that we heard about from residents and officers alike have deeply eroded community trust, particularly in African American and Latino communities suffering the most from gun violence on Chicago's South and West Sides. These neighborhoods are the hardest hit by CPD's pattern of unlawful force and breakdown in the city's accountability systems. These breakdowns breed distrust and undermine police legitimacy in the very communities that need fair, proactive policing the most. Distrust of law enforcement makes residents unwilling to share information, and that makes it harder for officers to solve and prevent crimes. Addressing the deeply rooted police community distrust is a critical part of fighting crime and reducing violence in Chicago. Chicago's leaders, including especially the mayor and superintendent, of course, are aware of many of these problems, and to their credit, have been working to address them, such as revamping IPRA, bringing officers new de-escalation training, rolling out body cameras, and adopting a new policy on the release of videos, just among some.
You've been watching a news conference from Chicago where the U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch announced the results of a 13-month investigation into the Chicago Police Department, and they found that the Chicago Police Department had a pattern of excessive force, exhibited a pattern of excessive force, and importantly, the Chicago Police Department has agreed, the City of Chicago, to enter a consent decree with the Justice Department to work on policing in that city going forward. It was also noted right there that the minority community in Chicago has been disproportionately hit by this use of excessive force. This all stemmed from the release of a video more than a year ago of Laquan McDonald being shot and killed by a police officer. I want to bring in Paul Callen, CNN legal analyst. And Paul, this was an interesting news conference right there. This was a 13-month civil rights investigation. They did find a pattern of excessive force. They did announce a consent decree. Explain to me what this all means.
The Justice Department has conducted a number of these evaluations of cities across the United States. They did it in Newark, New Jersey, for instance, where there were repeated complaints of excessive force by police departments. And what they do is they come in and they give recommendations as to how to improve policing, and maybe there'll be increased funding that will be found for the Chicago police, hopefully, as a result of this. But I have to say, John, I find it to be very, very unusual to hear this in Chicago at this time, because Chicago has one of the most brutal homicide rates in America, over 750 killings, I think, this year so far. Last year, I think there were 3,500 shootings in the mostly minority neighborhoods of Chicago. So a lot of people are saying that policing is not aggressive enough in Chicago. And I think that there will be many who will look at this report and say this is going to force the police to back off even more from aggressively policing the dangerous neighborhoods out of fear that they'll face federal sanctions of some kind if they're aggressive in policing.
Let me just tell you what was said about this, because Loretta Lynch addressed that. First of all, she said the excessive force stemmed from deficient training and poor supervision, and she did note the rising number of homicides in Chicago, the plague of homicides in that city over the last year or two that has been on the rise, though not to record levels, but it's certainly been on the rise in a very alarming way. She says the pattern of excessive force has eroded trust in minority communities and has prevented people from coming forward with information that may help in investigations, may prevent more murders. So what they seem to be trying to do, Paul, was say that maybe all these things are tied up into one little package.
Yes, and I think all of those points are quite legitimate. Having been a homicide prosecutor myself, I know that cooperation from the community in making cases against the bad guys is critical. And if you don't have the trust of the police and law enforcement officials, you cannot solve crime problems. But of course, on the other hand, you need a cooperative police force that's willing to go out and put their lives on the line to fight the bad guys. So it's a really delicate balance, not to scare the police out of aggressive policing, but on the other hand, to make sure that they honor and respect the legitimate law-abiding citizens in these neighborhoods. And hopefully, the Department of Justice will find a way to achieve these two competing goals.
It is a difficult challenge, to say the least. Paul Callen, thanks so much for being with us.
Okay. Thank you, John.
All right.
All All right. Welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I hope you enjoyed that. And can we do this? I just love that little laugh. It just, I don't know. It somehow it just brightens up my whole world. White House in flames. They are in flames. The news media is asking, what did Trump know and when did he know it? I mean, when you get that kind of questioning thrown out there to the public, this White House is in disarray already. What is it, 25 days, 26 days? That he's been president, and already corruption, lies on top of lies, you name it, in this Trump White House. White House admits Trump first learned of Flynn's lie in January. That tells you right now, if you know this guy was lying, Flynn, head of national security, who has now resigned because he talk to the Russians about the election before Trump was president. And this is corruption at its most. Then you got Kellyanne Conway, Sean Spicer. These are two people in the Trump administration. Pathological liars, no doubt about it. Spinners. And this White House is in trouble. I mean, this is in, and it's 25, 26 days from the date of this podcast. This guy's in trouble. This guy's in trouble. This is, in my estimation, and in my own opinion, this is the worst administration in U.S. history. This is no doubt about it. This is one of the worst, most corrupt administration in U.S. history. There's no doubt about it. The Russians played a part in getting this guy elected. The FBI played a part in getting this guy elected. Cons and lies and misleading the public played a huge part in getting Donald Trump elected. Those are the facts, folks. Those are the clear facts. And now the White House just has fell on his ass. We've got countries like Korea and Russia now doing missile tests. They're doing missile tests to test Donald Trump, from what I'm reading. And I don't know if any of those missiles can reach the United States. I don't think they can. At least from my point of view, they cannot. But still in all, they can reach many other countries. Russia, their missile program, there's a possibility of it reaching the United States. Trump is going to get us blown off the earth. This guy is just so unfit, so unexperienced, no experience, if I can put it that way, in governing. He's never had a government job. The first job that he gets in government is the president of the United States, which is crazy, you know. And for the last 25 days, him and his goons have been winging this whole thing. They've been governing by coloring books, crayons, you know. So it's in a mess. White House admits Trump first learned Flynn lies in late January. If Trump knew that this guy was lying, why didn't he come out and fire him then? Why did he just fire him? Lots of questions, folks. And we got some people in Congress who will not investigate this. They don't want to investigate it, but they spend so much time investigating Hillary's emails, which evidently they found nothing. But here, so much corruption in this Trump administration, and they will not, the committee on oversight will not investigate Trump and Flynn, simply because there is so much there. And maybe this guy who will not investigate is a part of it. I think the entire Republican Party in the Congress is corrupt. They're sticking by their own, even though their own, these guys deserve to resign and to be impeached. This is something. Mike Pence found out about this 11 days after Trump. That means that they kept Mike Pence, the vice president, out of the loop on these lies. As if Mike Pence is not a part of Donald Trump's inner circle, which he should be because he's the vice president. But, you know, Trump does what Trump wants to do. He doesn't give a damn about Pence. He's just using Pence as a vice president because the Constitution said that the president has to have a vice president. That's why Pence is there. He's really of no significance to this president. Flynn questioned by the FBI over Russia calls. And the FBI said that they didn't find anything illegal or damaging in their questioning of Flynn, which is probably a lie because the FBI was instrumental in defeating Clinton by releasing all those emails. And then they recanted and took them back, but the damage was done already. Okay, this guy Chaffetz, he says he's not going to investigate Flynn. So the Democrats are saying either investigate the Trump administration or you step down. I agree. Investigate or step down. Let somebody else take it if you don't want to do it. If you're not going to do your job, move aside, step down, resign, quit, and let somebody else do your job because this needs to be investigated. Republicans and Democrats agree that this needs to be investigated. For this guy to say he's not going to investigate it, it tells me that he's a part of the problem or he's involved some kind of way. You know, he's involved. And I want to say to the American people out there, we have to get these scumbags out of Congress. The reason why we have so many of these scumbags in Congress right now and in the Senate is because a lot of you didn't get out there and vote. You didn't vote. You may have voted for president of the United States in 2016, but you did not vote for your congressman. You did not vote for a senator. This is why we have Republican control of Congress, because you guys didn't get out there and do your duty. You have to, when you voting in a presidential election, you have to vote also for your senator and your representative. You have to keep voting. I mean, you just cannot just push the button for one person, one girl, one guy, one man, one woman. You have to go down after president, you know, secretary, senator, after senator, maybe your representative. You got to go down the ballot. You just cannot.
Well, all I'm going to do is vote for president. That's it.
And that's why we have Congress ran by a bunch of thugs, a bunch of crooks that don't want to do anything when there's conflicts of interest, when there's ethics violations. For instance, counsel to Donald Trump, Kelly Conway. I mean, this woman lies so much before she even opened her mouth, she done told a lie. And now she went on television, I believe it was Fox and Friends, and told the audience to buy Ivanka Trump's clothing. You know, that's a conflict of interest. That's an ethic violation. Democrats are seeking a reprimand or discipline for that. But I don't know if that's going to happen, you know, because you got Republicans in control. And all Democrats can basically do is ask. They don't have any power to actually do anything because it's trumped. You know, the Republicans control everything. But still in all, these people have to follow the Constitution. And the Republicans, they don't give two craps about the Constitution. They're in office. They're in power. They've got it all. So what the hell with the Constitution? And Trump has appointed all of these thugs, installed all of these thugs in these vital cabinet positions to destroy what was built up so many decades ago. And that's all they're going to do. A lot of these people who are installed in some of these sensitive positions, these cabinet positions, they don't know what the hell they're doing. They don't have a clue. Some of them can't even read. I mean, can't even think. Some of them are just mentally crazy, but Trump appointed these idiots to some of these posts, and especially the Department of Education. There goes public schools, because Republicans don't like public schools. I have a feeling one of the reasons why they do not like public schools is because they are unionized and they can't stand unions, and they want to get rid of unions because unions are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who are Democrats, and they vote democratically. And that's one of the reasons why they don't like public schools. And they installed some woman who don't know jack about them. And she bought the job. I mean, she paid off these senators. I mean, she really paid them off because they all voted for her. She bought the job. She paid for it. She's corrupt. You know, she doesn't know what she's doing. You know, but the minute she does something really, really offensive towards the education system in the United States, we're coming after her. Just like a lot of these folks, they're going to screw up and we're going to go. Because it's going to take people power. And it's going to take for us to unite, mobilize, and be strong out here against this administration in Washington right now. That's going to upend our lives. Our lives are being upended, turned over, and kicked around already by this administration. And it's totally in flames now. It is in flames. And White House already in flames. You know, and there's going to be a lot of probes. There's going to be a lot of investigations with or without this Chaffee guy, which I hope his constituency in Utah vote him out in 2016. That's what we have to do, folks. We got to get these people out. All of these people in the United States, in America, who are out here rallying, protesting, make sure you get your butts to the polls November 2018 and vote these jackasses out. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio, straight up out of Chicago. It is beautiful. A lot of people have asked me, George, why do you stay in Chicago? Why are you still living there? Why don't you move? It's too much crime. It's too much of this and that. I've been asked that, and I know people have thought that, you know, but I say, hey, I'm here for the long haul. I'm not going to get up and run like so many other people are. I understand them leaving, but I'm not going to leave. I'm going to stay here, and I'm going to do my best to help bring down some of the carnage in the city, to help stop some of the killings that's going on. I have a job to do, and I'm going to do it. And my job is not to hightail it and run, okay? And secondly, I live on the north side of the city near the lake. And I don't want to speak too fast, but there is not as much crime, or if any, on this side of the city, the north side, as it is on the west side and the south sides of the city. I mean, I'm going to put it this way. Crime can happen anywhere, anytime to anybody in the city of Chicago. But I'm just saying that there's less crime on the north side of the city than it is on the south and west sides of the city. Most of the crime you hear about on the national news in the city of Chicago is happening on the west and south sides of the city. Even the mayor will tell you, some of these aldermen will tell you that the north side is pretty much a quiet community. We have our problems over here. I mean, the thugs walk through, you know, I mean, that's no denying that. But in terms of just randomly shootings or no, that's not happening. And like I said, I don't want to speak too fast and say that the north side is all without crime. I'm not going to say that because it could happen anytime, anywhere to anybody. Just keep your fingers crossed. But the north side is not a war zone or a war zone for criminals. Let me put it that way. It is not. And I don't think it will ever be, because the bad guys, they concentrate in poor areas, impoverished areas. You know, so this is why so many of these leaders and these politicians are calling for resources in the community to try to stave off a lot of crime from the children that are growing up in these kinds of areas. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. And like I said before, beginning of the show, it's just heartbreaking that that these young children are being gunned down in the city of Chicago, and the police department stands by and make excuses and getting paid big money. You don't get paid big money to make excuses. You get paid big money to stop the crime that's going on in the city of Chicago. I'm going to say it again. I don't think they're doing their jobs. I think we need new leadership in the police department and on the fifth floor of City Hall. We need new leadership. We need people with ideas, plans, and solutions to end the murdering carnage in the city of Chicago.
Help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns.
All right. Welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We're just about off the air, folks. I want to say thanks to everybody who tuned into the show. I want to thank my guest, Milo Shapiro, for being on the show, talking about public speaking. We are just about off the air, folks. Thank you very much. I hope you join me tomorrow. Bye-bye, everyone.